Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the Poll Worker Update and Q&A conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, and to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. If you require any assistance, please press star zero. Thank you, and without further ado, I would like to hand the conference over to Ms. Marianne Jackson. Ma'am, you may begin.
All right. Thanks so much, Paul. Welcome, everybody. Good afternoon, and thanks so much for taking the time to join us this afternoon. For those of you that I've not had an opportunity to meet, my name is Marianne Jackson. I'm the Interim Director of Elections, and I'm joined today by my esteemed colleagues, Manley Parks, who is the solicitor for the Board of Elections, Lorene Hagen, Chief Clerk, Bureau of Elections, Crystal Winterbottom, who leads voter registration, Jim Savage, who leads the voting machine warehouse, Christina Iacona, who is heading up our poll worker coordination, Christina Peroni, who is doing organizing the pickup and drop-off process, and so many other things, and Stacey Heisey-Terrell, our HR partner. So welcome again, everybody. We do appreciate you taking the opportunity to join us today. So I think that we have everybody in the room who can answer all the questions that you may have about the upcoming election. And we felt like it was especially important to give all of you an opportunity to ask questions because there are so many things that are new in this general election. The least of which I'm going to go through just a couple right now, and then we will open it up and take an opportunity to get some questions in. But for those of you who have already been through the training, you know that there's a lot of new things that are going on in this general election. One of them is the voting machine, the old voting machines, and the new way that we're actually doing elections in Delaware County. So I think many of you know that in order to comply with state law, which now prohibits the use of voting equipment that does not generate a paper backup of each vote cast, we had to replace our old voting machines, and in their place we're going to be using paper ballots. So for those of you who were working in the primary, you know that. But for those of you who were not, that seems to be a surprise to voters. And so we want to make sure that all of you understand that, that we'll be using paper ballots at the precinct come Tuesday. For those of you who have, this will be our first time really to use the scanners. We didn't deploy them during the primary, so it's an opportunity for each of you to learn how to use the scanners. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about was the fact that the Board of Elections voted to deploy something on the scanners called the overcount and the undercount. And I wanted to make sure that all of you understand what that is. The overcount, if you put your paper ballot through the scanner and a voter has overcounted, meaning let's say they've voted for two presidential candidates, then it's going to basically spit the paper ballot back out, and the voter will have an opportunity to spoil their ballot, get a new ballot, and vote it. So that seems pretty intuitive. What may not be so intuitive is that we're also going to be using the undercount as well. So if somebody decides to not vote for a particular race, then the ballot will come back as not counted, and the voter will either have an opportunity to correct it and vote for all the races, or they can simply insert the paper ballot again and override that. So that's something new this year. The scanner is new, and, of course, that is new as well. So we want to make sure that all of you are aware of that. And that comes into play, too, because there's something else that's new for 2020, and that is that the election law actually eliminated the one-button or one-bubble straight ticket voting. So there will be no more opportunity to just fill in one bubble for the voters and choose a straight ticket for Republican or Democratic or voter. So that's where that overcount and undercount becomes extremely important as well. So those are a few of the new changes that that all of you will be expected to know about as you enter your precincts on Election Day. And I also wanted to just stop for a second and say thanks to each of you for agreeing to, you know, to participate on Election Day in your precincts. This is an amazing job during any election, but especially this year. So we do thank you for taking the time to go through the training and to understand the requirements of each of you on a, on Election Day. So with that, we'll take an opportunity again throughout the teleconference to get in some major bullet points that we think you should be aware of. But with that, I did want to just toss it back open to the operator and see if we can begin to take some questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one on your telephone keypad. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A roster. Our first question is from Gregory Trader. Your line is open.
Yes, ma'am. I took the poll worker seminar, the in-person orientation, and
great.
The one question I did not ask or didn't get answered was looking at the resource information through the links in the email. One of the things I wasn't able to find or locate was the test, the link to take the exam. Am I supposed to wait for something to come in the mail, or am I supposed to get an email with a link for the exam, or what is that? What do I do?
Thanks, Gregory. Christina Iacona, I'm going to toss that one over to you so you can answer.
You got it. Thank you. Yeah, everyone, the test is going to be live on the website by Thursday or Friday, and everyone that is a registered poll worker will also get an email with a link to the test. So don't worry, the test has not, you're not missing anything. We want the test to be a little bit later so that the questions and answers are fresh in everyone's mind on Election Day.
It shouldn't take you very long to go through the test either, Gregory. And if we can get it up a day earlier, we'll do our best to get it up, you know, by Wednesday, but at the very least by Thursday.
About evening on Thursday, or do you have a time or?
My goal would be to get it up first thing Thursday morning on the website.
Oh, that would be great.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for answering my question.
Paul, any other questions?
The next question is from Michael Sechi. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. first question is, how are we – I understand – masks are not required. You know, obviously we're going to be encouraging them, and we need to be as diplomatic as possible in trying to address people's concerns about their right to vote while not wearing a mask. But at the same time, if someone is in line and they're refusing to wear a mask, and hopefully we won't encounter this, but you never know. If someone's refusing to wear a mask, as judge of elections, am I able to tell that person that they must leave the line and come with me so that I can accommodate them apart from other people? If they refuse at that point, am I, assuming that that's the case, am I supposed to call the constable, call the cops, or do I just allow the person to remain in line?
Yeah, thanks for the question. Manley Parks, our solicitor, is going to answer that one for you.
Well, good question. I appreciate you raising it. And the answer is that you can, as the judge of elections, you will be responsible for the health and safety and welfare of the people in that polling place, including the board, the election board, the poll watchers, to the extent that they're, you know, inside the polling place and subject to your jurisdiction, and the voters. And so if there's somebody that's in line and not social distancing and is not wearing a mask, then you can ask that person to step out of the line and remain in a place that you determine is a safe place for that person, given their refusal to wear the mask and the risk of exposure to others. And for a reasonable period of time we'll probably have to estimate where that person's place in line was, and then that will give you a chance to allow the activity in the polling place to sort of diminish a little bit when it gets to be that maskless voter's opportunity to vote. If the person gets all the way into the polling place, if there are other people in the polling place at that point, that you would be entitled to have that person go wait in a safe area, a corner of the polling place, or potentially even a little bit outside the polling place if it's a very small polling place. Wherever in your judgment is a safe spot for that person to stay, where they're not going to risk infecting you or your fellow election workers or other voters. And if that person has to wait several minutes until whatever activity is happening with other voters in the polling place diminishes, then that is okay. They don't have a right to, it's not like the fast pass at Disney World where, you don't wear a mask and you get to go to the front of the line and they shoo everybody out of the polling place to let that person vote. If they are going to inconvenience everyone else by their decision, then they might have to wait a little while until the circumstances are safe. Now, that's not to say you need to make that person wait 2 hours, but if they have to wait 15 minutes or 20 minutes while the polling place activity diminishes so that they can vote and not risk other people's health, then that's okay. And then after they're done, we don't need to – we had a question beforehand about whether the entire polling place has to be sanitized. No, but things that voter touched, like the check-in table or the privacy booth, or their pen certainly should be wiped down and sanitized. It doesn't require shutting down the polling place and bringing in the decontamination team, which is a different situation.
So if, let's just say, in the outside chance that the person is making some kind of a political statement and refuses to get out of line, are we supposed to allow them to remain in line, or do we call the constable or dial 911?
If they are refusing to follow the directions of the judge of elections, then you would follow the path as with any other voter or poll watcher who's refusing to follow, or other person at the polling place who's refusing to follow the lawful direction of the judge of elections, which is you would call the constable as a first option. In the event that there is no constable available, or in the event that the situation is escalating and in your judgment involves a threat to public health and safety, then you may call 911 because matters of significant public health and safety are matters for the police. Now, if you do call 911 for any reason on Election Day, please also call the hotline number at the Board of Elections so we are aware of that situation and can monitor it.
Okay. Are ballot selfies allowed? I know they were allowed when we had curtains around the booths.
Yeah, we don't have any concern with ballot selfies so long as people take reasonable efforts not to capture other people who are in the polling place in their photos. They can't be used as an excuse to sort of start to take pictures of every last person in the polling place, but, as long as – use your good judgment on it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks, Manley.
Thanks, Paul. More questions?
The next question is from Donna Samuel. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Hello. I have multiple questions. I attended the in-person as well, and it was a wonderful presentation with Ziggy. But there was a discrepancy or a lack of clarity about mail-in ballots when people come in and want to surrender their ballot. Ziggy said that it could only be done if people had not written on the ballot. However, when I'm looking at the PDF about processing and assisting voters, and it says about remitting ballots, it says on that PDF that If the voter is surrendering a ballot in a sealed return envelope, please verify there is a ballot inside the envelope while respecting the voter's privacy. I wasn't sure exactly what that statement meant, but it sounded to me that a voter, if they decided, like they hadn't mailed in their ballot by that day, and they decided that, oh, instead of dropping in the mail, I want to surrender it, that they could do so. So I need clarity on that.
Okay, I'll start with that. I know you said you had other questions. The answer is that a voter may surrender a ballot even if they have marked up the ballot with votes. There's no rule that says that, you know, if you got all the way through marking up your ballot and then decided, you know what, I want to go vote in person instead, that you're prohibited from doing that.
Okay.
The language about ensuring that there's a ballot inside the sealed envelope is designed to address a situation where somebody has filled out their ballot, or maybe they haven't filled it out, but they've put it inside the privacy envelope and sealed that privacy envelope. And maybe they've even put the privacy envelope inside the exterior envelope and sealed that. You can't just take their word for the fact that there's a ballot inside those envelopes. You have to make sure that you confirm there's a ballot inside those envelopes.
So you do have to, so you're saying that if that's the case, that the judge of elections is to open the envelope before sealing it to make sure that there's something inside it?
Yes, and what I would suggest you do is you may ask the voter to open the envelope rather than opening it yourself, and then have the voter, you know, show that what's inside is a ballot, not just a regular white sheet of paper or some other thing. You need to confirm that there's an actual ballot in there.
Okay, cool. That's really wonderful. Thank you for clarity on that. I really appreciate that. My second question is that when I was reading the things, it said about when you're picking up supplies that your white box would be at the pickup, but the blue bag would be on election day. Was that just a typo at some point? Are we picking up both the box and the blue bag from the supply place on this Saturday or Monday?
I can take that. This is Christina Peroni.
Hi,
yes. Hi. Yes, we are going to have everything for you together at that one location. And that same location is where you're going to go to drop it off after you close your poll.
Okay, phenomenal. The other thing that I wanted to know about, I know some of the polling places last year, even in Yadin where I am, some precincts had plastic shields that were delivered to them. Will any places have plastic shields this time that they were able to put up in front of the inspectors at the table to separate them from the voters?
None are being delivered, but we have some, and if they want to make arrangements, we can get them.
Yeah, so Jim Savage, who is responsible for our voting machine warehouse, says that none are being delivered with your equipment, but we can actually have them delivered to your precinct.
Okay. How can they be requested? Because I know there's one person who is severely asthmatic and cannot work without that.
Yeah, can you, if you could call the voting machine warehouse and request that?
I sure will. And then
okay.
I'm almost done. When I was, the identity label for the ballot bags, has it been determined yet where they're going to be? Like the pockets on the ballot bag where you're supposed to put in the name of your precinct? And I keep hearing that labels are going to be, for identity labels are going to be provided for that. Will they be in the blue bags or?
Hi. Can you just repeat that question? This is Christina again.
Hi, Christina. So you know the ballot bag that when we take it out and close it up at the end of the night, there's nothing to identify the bag as what precinct it's coming from. Last June, I actually wrote up a piece of paper and put the number of our precinct on the in the pocket of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
But Ziggy said this morning and someplace else on the PDF, it said that they would be provided, that labels would be provided, but Ziggy didn't know how they were being provided.
The labels will be provided, this is Stacy, in the white box. So you'll have a brightly colored sheet of paper that you can slide into that top pocket on your ballot bag.
Phenomenal. And my last question, and it's probably insignificant, but in the PDF on opening the polls, there was a reference to a reconciliation log on page 6 of that. It says verify count enter in reconciliation log. Is that something new?
Lorreen, do you want to talk about that, or do you want me to talk about it?
Is that referencing the provisional reconciliation?
No. It was in the PDF on opening the polls on page 6. It said verify count on zero report and enter in reconciliation log.
Okay, this is opening certificate on the return sheet.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
There's the opening certificate.
Oh, okay. So the reconciliation log is the return sheet.
And then there's also going to be something new on the return sheet, which will say how many of the precinct ballots you have, you're starting with. Then at the end of the night on the closing certificate, there'll be lines that will ask you how many ballots were cast and then how many unused ballots are you returning to the county.
Okay, so that reconciliation log, though, is just the return sheet.
Right. There's information on it, but that's where it'll be found. But you're just keeping count, much like you do on the reconciliation form for the provisional.
Okay, phenomenal. You have answered all my questions, and thank you all so much for all you do.
Thank you, Ms. Samuels.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to charge you an extra dollar for all the questions that you asked. Just joking.
The next question is from Stephanie Albero. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I was going through the online training, and I wanted to know, during the primary, there was a video that showed when someone comes in, a voter comes in, what the board would do to sign them in, give them their ballot, like the whole process, and also provisional ballot. I've been doing this for a few years, but I do have a couple people that are going to be in my polling location that this is their first time. And one of my clerks is really getting nervous and upset that she's just reading about it and not seeing what she's to expect.
I don't know that the old video was actually still available in the training resources. We tried to upgrade those resources with videos about the equipment and materials and PDFs. So I'm trying to think about what best to do if the PDF or the written. We also included a lot of pictures in the guide. So our hope was that it would be pretty self-explanatory, but. I'm trying to think about what other guidance to provide in that situation.
Okay, that was just my question. I just have a new clerk who I thought maybe a similar video was going to be presented for this election, just so new people coming on board feel confident that they know what to expect. But if it's not available, I understand.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Other questions? Well, actually, what I'd like to do now is just maybe take a couple of minutes and turn it over to Christina Peroni. And Christina, do you want to just real quickly kind of walk people through the drop-off and pick-up process? Do you think it's a little bit new this year?
Sure. So I'd like to also just make an announcement that our locations are right now set for Coopertown Elementary School, Chester High School, Interboro High School, and Upper Darby High School. Those will all be open for pickup at 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. on this Saturday, October 31st. We originally said that Rose Tree Park was going to be available on Saturday as well. We are now switching Rose Tree to be available on Sunday from noon until 5. So we are going to reach out to all the folks who were going to Rose Tree and tell them that we've switched it to Sunday. But we now have an alternative. If somebody can't make the Saturday, they can reach out to us and let us know, and we can have their materials at Rose Tree for Sunday. So is there a place that I'm asking our team that they can call to tell us? Maybe Christina, do you know how people, folks can reach out and say that they can't make the pickup on Saturday? Is there a phone number, an email address or something?
Yeah, you know what? Why don't we take that offline, Christina, and go back
okay.
to the...
Okay, so we'll put that on our website. So if there's a problem, people know how to reach us. And then on election evening, you will just come to your same location whenever you're done closing the polls, and you will stay in your cars, and we will take the materials out of your cars. We will log you out. Hopefully it will be a very easy process. We have scanners now, and we're putting basically tags on everything so we can scan everything back in, and hopefully it's going to be very quick because we know you'll be working hard and it'll be the end of a very long day. So we're streamlining the process and hope it's going to be a big success.
Thanks, Christina. And I would just add, I think for anybody who's gone through the online training, you know, one of the most critical pieces of information we're going to get back from you are the little cartridges that go inside the scanner. It's like a memory stick, and it's going to have the electronic kind of capturing of all the votes. And so that's going to be super important that we get that back, and you'll have a clear box with a little foam insert that you'll put that cartridge in just to, you know, help keep from losing it. And we're also going to be providing all of you with tablets, like an iPad, more like a Samsung, that's going to have all the training materials loaded on it, and you'll have it in your polling places and can be able to reference it throughout the day in case you get some situations you want to get some more guidance on. So, Paul, why don't I turn it back to you and see what other questions we have.
Our next question is from Kathy James. Your line is open.
Hi. Excuse me. I'm very cynical, and I'm wondering whether or not anyone has connected with the police to make sure that they will respond in the event that there is voter intimidation and that kind of stuff going on. I mean, I'm very cynical. I just don't know where the police are going to come down, and I want to make sure they come down on the side of, you know, justice and liberty and truth and all that. Has anybody connected with the police to discuss response?
This is Manly Parks. I can take that. The answer to your question is yes. We have been in contact with the police, and we have been in contact with the police for several weeks. The police communications with the police are all being interfaced through the DA's office, the county DA. And in addition to ongoing communications, which, as I say, have been happening for several weeks at this point, we also had all met about 2.5 weeks ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago at this point, with the Chief President, Judge Kelly, and Judge Pagano, who's been designated by Chief Kelly to sort of run point for election matters in the Court of Common Pleas of Delaware County. And there was an extensive meeting in Judge Kelly's chamber, or in Judge Kelly's courtroom, with representatives of all of the major police stakeholders, including the Fraternal Order and the sheriff, the chief of the constables, as well as head election officials, county executive, the first assistant district attorney and myself to discuss these coordination issues. We don't have any reason to believe that police will be doing anything other than acting in good faith and at the direction of the DA and the Bureau, the Board of Elections. But obviously, we are also sensitive to what can happen if police go rogue on this and try to, you know, take their own unique approach to enforcement of elections. And should that happen, you know, the DA is going to be actively involved. And if we need to go to courts, the courts are already engaged in the conversation, and we will do so.
Good. Thank you. I have another question. With that over-under thing where it will reject the ballot if they don't vote for a particular office, what if they don't want to vote for a particular office? Can they not vote for president or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. So all you have to do, all you simply have to do is insert your ballot again and hit vote ballot as is, and it will override.
Okay.
Yeah, it's super easy. We just wanted to make sure that you're all aware of it, as some of the voters may have questions.
Just for clarification, maybe somebody can speak to this, but my recollection is the ballot doesn't even come all the way out of the scanner. It slides partially out of the scanner. A little message appears on the screen saying, you've got an undervote. Would you like to remove the ballot or cast it as is? You hit the cast as is button and it gets pulled back in. You don't even have to insert it.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. Next question.
The next question is from Mary Jo Pratt. Your line is open.
Thank you, and thanks for taking the question. I'm a judge of election, Darby Township. I would just like clarification that we are, in fact, picking up the blue bags on Saturday with the white box.
You absolutely are picking up the blue bags with the white box. There's nothing other than the cage of equipment that's going to be delivered to your precinct. So, yes, as the judge of election and PPE, that will be delivered to your precinct. But other than that, you pick up everything during the pickup process.
Okay. Just one other thing about that. Your material said that it was going to be delivered on election day. That was a great concern. It also says that the ballots are contained in the blue bag. That said, yesterday in the optional equipment orientation, they showed that a box of ballots were, in fact, in the cage.
Do you want me to take that?
Right. So I can take that. You are not picking up ballots. They are in the cage. The only ballots that you're going to be receiving from us are provisional ballots in the white box.
One other tiny question, and that had to do with some training, some stuff about the envelopes and what goes in them. There was a reference to an X envelope, and it said that ballots voted but not scanned. And my question about that is, how is that even possible? And I'm sure there's some logical explanation for that, but it wasn't clear to me.
I'm wondering, is that the envelope that you put the provisional ballots in?
I don't think so. There's a big white reconciliation envelope that all the provisionals are supposed to go into.
That might be an artful way to describe a ballot that's not necessarily been voted, but has been marked to voter but then spoiled. I'm not sure. I don't know what not scanned means.
There were other references to spoiled ballots.
Ballot that's voted, not scanned, other than a provisional. Unless it's one that's
unless
been marked
spoiled.
And turned back in as a spoiled ballot by the voter, and then they've been given a replacement, or if they don't want a replacement, they want to leave, then they can do that too.
Oh, okay. That would explain it. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks. Next question.
Our next question is from Kathy Price. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'm a machine operator, and I was wondering if somebody my understanding is they can come into our polling place. They have to wear a mask. But when they come into the polling room, they can take it off, and we can't refuse them to write to vote. Excuse me. If they need help with the machine for some reason and they don't have a mask on, do I have to help them?
If they don't have a mask on, you may assist them in a way that you deem to be and that your judge of election, in consultation with your judge of elections, you deem to not put yourself at risk.
And there wouldn't be any repercussions if I said, if you put a mask on, I'll come over and help you, but if not, I'm not doing it.
I think that what I would recommend is that you would say, I can answer your questions from a safe distance, but I can't come over and, you know, get within the social distance boundary in order to, like, point at something on your piece of paper or something like that. All I can do is your questions from a safe distance.
Okay, and that's within my rights to do that.
Yeah, I think you should attempt to help them as best you can.
Yes, yes.
That's what I'm saying. Just because they don't have a mask doesn't mean, you know, you can't talk to them at all or you are entitled to.
Oh, no. But I just don't, I wouldn't want to go over and, you know, get up close and personal.
Of course. And that's totally fine. That's part of what that person is trading in. If they want to go in there and vote without a mask, they're trading in the opportunity to have a little bit more closely proximate assistance from the staff.
Okay, thank you very much.
And you know what? I wanted to clarify something too, because I think one of you just asked something about the X envelope that says that it's for all paper ballots that were voted but not scanned. To be honest with you, I think a couple of us are looking at each other with question marks trying to figure out what that is too. So we're hoping to be able to answer that while you're all on the teleconference. But I would say if we can't come up with an answer for it, I probably wouldn't worry about the X envelope, because you're going to put all your provisionals in one envelope and all your spoiled ballots in another. So,
yeah, which is the Y envelope. So the X envelope you're referring to is not where the spoiled ballots go, because that goes in the Y envelope. We'll just figure out what that is a reference to.
Paul, any other questions?
Our next question is from Robert Scutieri. Your line is open.
Yes. I had a couple questions. So I guess my understanding now is that the scanners, actually, they have a cartridge or a disk in there that is actually counting the vote?
A drive.
It's well, we refer to it as a V drive. It looks like a little thumb drive or memory stick, but yes, it's recording all of the scanned ballots. That's why it's so important for us to get it back.
Right, right.
We also have the paper ballots too that you return to us as well. So we'll have the hard copy paper ballots as a backup. But we do, you know, of course, our preference is always going to be to have that V drive back.
Okay. A reference was made earlier. The reason we switched to this system was because there wasn't any backup before. I thought the cartridge was the backup in the old machines.
The cartridge was the backup, but the cartridge isn't paper, and the law requires a paper backup when you vote cast now.
Oh, could you repeat that, please?
The cartridge was a backup in a sense. I mean, that's what captured the votes, but the cartridge in the old machines wasn't a paper backup, and it didn't capture each individual vote. So that's why it doesn't comply with the Pennsylvania law any longer.
Okay. Not to belabor that. But anyway, so now we have a scanner, printer, and a touch writer, right? Is there... Mostly in the primary, people voted with marking the ballot and dropping it in the box. Now, there also was a few that used the touch writer. It seems to me that it is much easier to mark the ballot and place it in the scanner than it is to use the computer touch writer, then print it out, and then put it in the scanner. Am I understanding this correctly?
You are. The reason that the touch writer exists is primarily to ensure ADA compliance. We need to make sure we have some way in each polling place or each precinct that a disabled voter can reasonably vote, and that's what the touch writer is designed to do. Although, if somebody wants to use it and they're not disabled, we don't prohibit that.
No, but in order to do that, well, in the primary, you had to put in a code to get the voter set up to vote. Now it seemed like in the training, I guess the PDF, one of the things, it said that there would be a number that you would give to the voter to put into the machine to vote. Is that correct? In other words, how do we set up the person to use the touch writer?
Yeah, Lorraine, do you want to answer that? Give us one second.
I repeat the question.
It's about the code. Do you have to give each individual voter a code, or does the machine operator have the code?
Well, no, neither of those. Actually, it's a code that the machine operator or whoever is going to work the scan, the touch writer will have, and they'll engage that for any voter that needs the touch writer. And then you'll get them to the point where then they begin to vote. But there's two screens that the poll worker engages first, then you surrender the machine to the voter to continue on with their voting process.
Think about when you're in a supermarket and you're trying to scan yourself out at the checkout line, and it won't take some item, and the person who's sort of over near the scanners comes over and puts in their little code and helps you. That's kind of how it's going to work. The machine operator comes over and puts in the code and sets the machine up, and then the voter will take over from there once the machine's set up.
Yeah,
and it's the same code. It's the same code for every person who wants to use the touch writer.
Right. That's how it was in the primary. So
yeah.
It'll be the same. Okay.
Yeah.
Just one other thing. Just a comment. I don't know. I don't expect the police are going to go rogue. I just had to say that. Thank you.
I don't expect that either.
Okay.
Paul, next question.
The next question is from Amy Johnson. Your line is open.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. A couple questions. I have the information, the email that had the document with all the poll worker training video links and PDFs, and I can't get all of them to work. But some other caller mentioned a website with these, and I thought maybe that would work better. Is there such a place, or what do I do?
There actually is. I think we identified, unfortunately, early on that some of the links in the syllabus we sent out weren't working correctly, so we went back and retooled those. So if you get on the Delaware County website and you go to elections and poll worker resources, all of those modules and videos are actually there, and you can click right on them through the website, and they'll work just fine.
Okay, so tell me that again. So I go to the Delaware County what?
Is it who can remember the exact?
I got it. I can get that. It's delcopa.gov/vote.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's delcopa.gov/vote. And then you would click on the little, I think it's about the third or fourth tab down on the page. It says poll worker resources. And if you click on that, it will provide all of the information that you require.
Okay, that's super. All right, thank you. Just want to clarify, the person was asking about the provisional ballots, and I know you do not scan those, but they go inside. Was that like the white envelope? Is that what you said? So what do we do with provisional ballots? That's my question.
Hold on just a second. I'm looking for the exact envelope that goes in.
The actual provisional ballot goes inside the secrecy envelope that's green, which then goes into the affirmation envelope that the board and the voter have different segments to complete. Then all of the voted provisional affirmations, the larger envelopes, come back to voter registration, and I think they go into the provisional return envelope, which is a much larger white one. It's about the size of your A and your B envelope.
Okay. So, it goes into the green secrecy envelope first.
Right, then that goes into a green affirmation envelope.
Yep, and then all of those go into the larger white envelope.
People who vote provisional ballots, let me just say this, their names don't go in the book. Am I right?
Do we keep
that?
A separate list of them? No.
The list of them is the actual collection of the ballots that you return.
Okay. Okay. And another question. There's a couple places where, well, like for instance, you mentioned if somebody brought in their mail-in ballot but they didn't want to use it, they wanted just to vote in person. And use that to spoil the ballot, and that's also true, I guess, if they messed up and voted for two presidents or something, then we are supposed to spoil the ballot. How exactly do we spoil a ballot, and then what do we do with it?
Okay, this is Lorene, and if somebody has a spoiled ballot, like you said, either they're made a mistake on the ballot, they want a new one, then what I would recommend is have them fold that ballot over so no one can see their votes. The back of the ballot is blank. And then they would hand that to whatever board worker is manning the area where the voters are. And they would deposit that into the Y envelope. That's a large manila-looking envelope. And that would go inside that spoiled ballot. And then they would get a new ballot from the table that they could start over with.
Okay, cool. All right. Last question. Do we get I voted stickers to hand out?
Yes, it is our goal to have the I voted stickers as part of the pickup materials on Saturday.
Oh, that would be awesome. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Sure.
One quick point, since it's relevant to the last series of questions. When somebody's coming and wants to spoil their mail-in or absentee ballot, they need to produce two things. They need to produce the ballot, and they need to produce the outside return envelope. If they don't have both of those things, then they only can vote a provisional ballot. That's number one. They do not need to produce the secrecy envelope as part of that process. However, if they want to, or if they have it, there's no problem in accepting it from them as part of this spoliation exercise. Second of all, you will see supplemental poll book instructions that will tell you that there are going to be some voters who are indicated in the poll book as having received a mail-in ballot, or having been sent at least a mail-in ballot or an absentee ballot by the county. And then they may be stamped with a red provisional-only stamp. Those voters are not entitled to spoil their ballot. And if people want to know why, the reason why is those people have received a replacement ballot, which means that in theory they have two ballots. And if we don't make them vote provisional only, there's a possibility they could walk on their way into the polling place, drop one of their ballots in a drop box, bring the other ballot into the polling place, and swap it out for an election day ballot. So we know who's received the replacement ballot, and in order to prevent that sort of double voting, those people will only be able to vote a provisional ballot in the polling place. So they'll be very clearly stamped provisional only in the poll books. Okay? So that's what that's about.
Also, in the returned envelope or the ballot, if someone surrenders their ballot to then vote on the new system, there's also an affirmation they have to complete. It's in the white supply box.
Correct.
It's a cream color, And I would say it's about maybe half of a sheet of paper. So it's a small form that they fill out. They'll get that also from the table, the poll workers.
And Paul, any other questions?
We have our next question from Paul Canataro. Your line is open.
Okay, thank you. I have a few questions. Unfortunately, they go back a little bit, but let me just. Okay, the white box that you, when you say white box, you mean, is that the white box that we pick up, or is that the white ballot box? Because there's two white boxes.
Yeah, it's the white box you pick up.
It's the white box we pick up. Okay, all right. And is there a list of all the people that are on the phone call with a phone number, just in case we have a question? Like, I've been writing down who's giving the answers, just in case we have a question, we could contact that person by email or by phone.
Are you talking about those of us that are answering the questions?
Yes.
Can we give you contact information?
Yes.
I think the best thing would be to direct your questions to the board, using the general number or email account, and that the board staff will allocate those questions to the appropriate people and get answers and get back to you.
Can you provide that general information?
You talk about the 6, yeah. So that phone number is 610-891-VOTE, VOTE, 610-891-VOTE.
Okay, and then is there an email address also?
There is. This is Tim Savage from the voting machine warehouse. If you have any equipment or location-related questions, you can call the voting machine warehouse 610-874-8780.
That's 610-874-8780?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Thank you.
My
other question is, you mentioned about when you call the police or you call 911 to make sure that we call down to the election board, and you said that there was a hotline number. But I don't think you provided the hotline number. Could you give that to us?
It's in the material.
It's in the materials you're going to be picking up. We're not disseminating that in advance to avoid abuses of that line.
What do you know where in the materials?
You know what? That's a great question. I don't think we know the answer to that, but it will be in your materials.
Hi, this is Christina. What we're going to try and do is keep any loose pieces of paper in the white box. So you should find that in the white box. We are going to have your traditional blue bag. You're also going to have a new clear bag. And in the clear bag, you're going to put the white box, our little clear box, which is used to hold those vote drives, which are so important, and your I voted stickers and anything else that we need so that you just walk away with two bags. So if there are any other instructions, look in your white box.
The white box that we pick up.
Correct.
Okay. And you see you're Christine. There's two Christinas, aren't there?
There are two Christinas. I'm Christina Peroni.
Peroni, okay, thank you. Okay, thank you.
All right, Paul?
The next question is from Rochelle Terrero. Your line is open.
Hi, I watched the and I listened to the online training. I have some questions. It says that if a name is in a poll book on a supplemental list, you can't conform voter registration status. There's a red dot that comes on. Is that got to do with the provisional voter?
So if somebody is I'll try to answer your question if I understand it. If someone comes into the polling place and says that they are registered to vote, and you can't find them in the poll book or the supplemental poll book, then per the poll book instructions, you should call voter registration. Voter registration will get records because occasionally people's information doesn't make it into the poll book or supplemental poll book. And so it is a small but possible chance this person is registered to vote and they just aren't in the book. If the person turns out to be a person who is registered and just not in the book, voter registration will give you a particular code associated with that, and you'll write that person in the back of the poll book, and this is all described in detail in the instructions in the poll book. You write that person's name and information in the back of the poll book and the code that you're given by voter registration. If you don't get a code from voter registration, you can't write somebody's name in the back of the book, and you cannot give them a ballot.
Okay.
The red dot reference is that you'll be getting a supplemental poll book or a supplemental list of everybody who's received a ballot, from whom the Board of Elections has received a ballot back, a mail-in ballot already. And what our recommendation is, what our direction is to take that list and take a red pen, which you'll be supplied with, and go through your poll book and mark with the red pen next to every single person who's identified as having already returned a ballot to the Board of Elections that we have received back. And those folks are generally not to be given a ballot. However, you will have supplemental instructions at the very top of your poll book that say that if a person comes in and says, yes, I returned my ballot, but I'm worried I voted a naked ballot, or I'm worried that I didn't complete the declaration right, that person can receive a provisional ballot only. Okay?
Right. There's a phone number here. It says call 610-891-4659 if you have questions on the eligibility of supplement list.
That's voter number.
That's correct.
So who makes that judgment call? It's not me who's just sitting behind taking names. That would be the other person, right, that would take over?
I'm not sure what you mean by that judgment call. There's no judgment call. If the person's not in the book, then you will call voter registration to find out if they're in the county records and just didn't make it into the book. And the person on the other end of the phone will be checking the statewide SURE registry to make sure as to whether that person's officially registered in the county or not. There's no judgment exercise there. If the answer is they are, they will get the code for that voter. If they aren't, then that voter will not get a code, and that voter can only vote a provisional ballot.
But who makes the phone call?
You will. Whoever is directed by the judge of elections, whoever on the board of the local board of elections is directed by the judge of elections to make that call, will make it.
Okay, that's what I needed to know. Okay, I have another question. As far as the if the voter's address is different from the book, and that it says voter must complete section 3, current address. Now, they come in, if they have a license and they show it to you, and this has happened where their address has been changed, I mean, how do you follow through?
Well, there are, first of all, the point of there are only voters who are first-time voters at the polling place need to show ID. If you're asking for ID from anyone else, that's unlawful. Don't do it. Everybody else, your signature is your ID. If somebody is an ID-required voter, which will be listed right in the poll book, and the ID they present has a different address, that doesn't matter. The point of the ID is to identify the human being, not to prove where they live.
But can't they say, I'm John Doe, and you have to, you know what I'm saying? How do you know that they're John Doe?
If they're an ID-required voter, you would look at their ID, and it would say John Doe, or it wouldn't. If they're not an ID-required voter, then they're going to sign in the book, and then you compare the signature in the book to the signature on file, which is already populated in the book, and you
will cover up
the signature when they sign so they can't see it and try to imitate it. And then you will hand off that signature and compare the two and see if they look anything alike. If they don't look alike, then the members of the Board of Elections will have to, that local Board of Elections under the supervision of the judge will have to convene. And this would be the judge of elections, the majority inspector, and the minority inspector would have to convene and make a determination about whether they think that person's the right person. At that point, the person could be, could provide identification if they're a non-voter ID voter. The person could have someone else in line vouch for them and say, this is my neighbor. They can tell you I am who I am. And ultimately, the three principal members of the board, the judge of elections, the majority inspector, and the minority inspector, will make a determination about whether they think that person sufficiently proved their identity. And if the answer is yes, then they get a regular ballot. If the answer is no, then they get a provisional ballot if they want one.
I got you. Now, I have just one more question. Are you going to be supplying masks if they refuse to wear one and then they comply?
Yes.
Yes, there'll be extra masks available to offer to voters who got a mask or don't bring one.
Okay, I got you. Thank you so much. And I did go through that online training, and I will go through it one more time just to make sure. So I have everything written down. Thank you very much.
Great.
Our next question is from Cheryl Toverson. Your line is open.
Hi, great. Thanks, you guys, very much for being here. This is so helpful. Also, thankfully, most of my questions have been answered, but I still do have two more. I just want to be sure, because on page 3 of the provisional ballot information, there is a bullet point there that says if it's indicated that the mail-in or absentee ballot has been returned, they may not receive any kind of ballot at the polling place. Their vote has already been cast. So
that's new information. The information I just provided is new information. It will be the subject of a supplemental directive on the poll book. The reason it's coming at this point is because the Department of State has issued a directive within the last few days clarifying on this point. And the issue is people might realize that they have voted a naked ballot, and the only way that they could possibly fix that and have their ballot count would be to come in and vote a provisional ballot in the polling place. And the board may very well have received that mail-in ballot by that point. So in order, if somebody does have a realization that they might have incompletely filled out their voter declaration on the back of their mail-in ballot, or maybe had voted a naked ballot, they can come in. They'll be permitted to vote provisionally, even though the book says the board may have received their ballot back from them. And there's no fear here. They won't be able to vote twice because their first ballot, if defective, won't be counted. If it isn't defective, that will be counted, and the provisionals, which are counted later, will be not counted.
Okay, perfect. Good. That was, I just wanted to make sure that I understood that correctly from what you had said previously. So thank you. And then my other final question is really easy, I hope. So if someone is coming in just to drop off their ballot, they've already filled it out, they're, you know, thrilled, they just want to drop it off, do they need to stand in line also? Or is there going to be some mechanism where they can just, you know, scoot in and drop it off and that's it?
There is no drop off of mail-in or absentee ballot at polling places this round. Only in the primary. They can go at any of the 41 drop boxes in the county. They can return that to any of the voter service centers in the county. Be dropping it off. They would be dropping it off at a polling place.
Got it. Oh, thank you for that. I did not realize that. So they have to go to one of the boxes. Perfect. Okay, good. I'm glad I asked that. It was on my list of, like, is this a stupid question or not? So I'm glad I asked. All right, again, thank you guys very much. This has been really, really helpful.
Good, good. I'm glad. And you know what? We had a little bit of confusion around the envelope as they're listed in the Election Day guide for poll workers. So I wanted to just take an opportunity to to clarify that. We knew, we were all scratching our head looking at this envelope X, and actually Delaware County is not using envelope X. So you don't need to worry about envelope X. You shouldn't be using that. Hopefully, I don't know if it's going to be in your pickup materials. It shouldn't be, so you don't have to worry about that. What is labeled as envelope Y, we don't call it envelope Y, but it will be for your spoiled ballots. So it's your spoiled ballots envelope. And Delaware County does use C and D envelopes for return sheets. So apologies about that. We got that wrong in the poll workers guide. So again, we use C and D envelopes for return sheets. There's no envelope X, and there's nothing called an envelope Y, but it is termed spoiled ballots envelope. So apologies about that confusion. So Paul, do we want to go back to any other questions?
Our next question is from Sharon Molino. Your line is open.
Hi. Sorry, I'm just capturing what the last changes were. We're in a police station, thankfully, and so we have two precincts in a kind of a tight area. The staff is really well experienced. So the concern that we have, and we learned from the primary, that setting up all of that, these tables, you know, the printers, scanners, et cetera, that takes a lot of time. It's very time consuming. So the machine operator, who is very bright, very quick, she's actually stressing. And once we... Well, the question is it possible we could go the afternoon before and just open the cage and just set our tables up so that we have, like, a roadmap?
Cage can't be open until election morning.
Jim Savage is correct. The cage cannot be open until election morning.
Okay, that's actually what my first response to her was. I am going right after they're delivered and laying out a game plan with the people who own the police station. They're willing to set it up roughly for us.
Then you've addressed what I was going to recommend, which is people are welcome to go to if they can make appropriate recommend or arrangements. And I think Jim Savage is. Folks might be able to help with that if they need a contact person at the polling place. But they're okay. Welcome to go in the day before or at some point ahead of time and just make sure, you know, set up tables, not the stuff that's inside the cage, but, the check-in tables and that kind of stuff. You can arrange those things ahead of time. And if you're able to do that and that's one less thing to do on election day morning, then that's great.
Okay. Good. I just wanted to confirm what I've been telling our team that they can't do was correct. So thank you. And a huge thanks for providing a tablet, because even though the place often says, yeah, we have Wi-Fi and we want to, many times Wi-Fi might not be working or for whatever reason, it's just helpful to have it already on a tablet. So thank you for that. That's it.
The next question is from Chris Jackson. Your line is open.
Thank you. Part of my question had already been answered, but maybe just to go over a moment would help to clarify for everyone. And I have a couple follow-up questions. So my question was, if a voter comes to her polling place on election day to vote in person after she's already submitted her mail-in ballot, but she says she's made a fatal error on her mail-in ballot, for instance, it was a naked ballot or failed to complete the declaration, will she be allowed to vote on a provisional ballot on election day? I think the answer was yes. Is that correct?
Correct. Person can vote provisional.
Okay. What will the poll book say?
I would be treated the same as any other provisional ballot voter.
But in the space where the signature would normally go, won't it say something like ballot cast not eligible?
Yeah, I think that it could be. You could indicate provisional ballot in there.
Okay, so just manually cross it off and write provisional.
Yes.
Okay, great. And so next question is, what if the voter comes to us and she states that she's made a non-fatal error, like an overvote or an undervote? Shall that person be refused?
This is not a process where somebody wants to change their ballot. If they mailed in a ballot and had a change of heart about some candidate, they're not getting a provisional ballot to do that because, frankly, if their ballot is non-fatally impacted, the ballot they mailed in, that mailed-in ballot will be counted and the provisional wouldn't be. So there would be no point in voting the provisional. The only point of the provisional is in the event that there's a fatal error and it means that their mail-in or absentee wouldn't be counted, only then would the provisional be considered.
Excellent. Thank you. That's very clear. And my last question on this issue was, what if the voter is afraid they've simply returned it too late, but maybe it was in time to arrive by November 6th? So they've returned their mail-in ballot. It's showing up as not having been received on our poll books, but that's because it's just still in transit or hasn't been registered and maybe gets there, say, November 5th.
Any voter indicated in the poll book as having received from us a mail-in or absentee ballot, but where we haven't received it back from them, they're all entitled to vote provisional. For just the reason, if their ballot comes back too late, it wouldn't be counted, but then the provisional ballot could be considered.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. That clears up my questions. Appreciate it.
Paul?
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And if your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. The next question is from Stephen Sarrazin. Your line is open.
Hi. For the mail-in ballots that people remit, do those end up going into the same envelope as the regular spoiled ballots or not?
The envelopes from the mail-in process, I believe they're going to go in the same spoiled ballot envelope. Lorene, any?
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's all.
The next question is from Pamela Allen. Your line is open.
Hi, yes. I have a question. I was at the training on Saturday, which was absolutely wonderful. And you also answered the question about the mail-in ballots. Unless you're on this phone or you were there at the training, nobody knows that you take the people come in with the mail-in ballots and drop them off on Tuesday at the drop-in box, which is not at the poll place. So I guess my question is there's got to be some way to let people know, other than them coming to the polling place to vote, and they say, oh, well, I'm going to drop this off, and then you're telling them they have to go 5 blocks away or a mile away to put in their drop-in ballots.
We'll post something about that on the website. There's probably not anything we can do beyond that, but we will post a notice on the website that there are not going to be ballot drop boxes at the polling places for people looking to return their mail-in or absentee ballots.
Okay. I know in Springfield we have a call-in that they call in telling us different things, and they can maybe call the Springfield where we are and say, drop off ballots or at the library and we have to go on Tuesday or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, we can also consider putting a piece of paper in the pickup materials that speak to the fact that no drop off ballots allowed at the precincts, but they have to be dropped off at the actual mail-in ballot drop boxes around the county.
Right, because nobody knows that. Okay, my second question was the jump drives. I got that information at the at also on Saturday at the hands-on thing. I did not see anywhere, unless I missed it, on any of the PDF files at the end of closing procedure to take that out and put it in the plastic container. Anywhere, for the scanner, the printer, any of the things. I did not see, I mean, I know about it and I'm writing it down, but I did not see anywhere it says, make sure you take out that jump dry and put it in the plastic container.
Hi, this is Christina. When we give out our materials, we plan to show everybody this special box and explain it to them and just say, this is our special box. It's a clear box that goes in a clear bag. And so it should be pretty easy to just everybody understand right when we give it to them at pickup. So it's going to be very easy when you see it.
Well, no, I understand how to do it, but I'm saying if you're having a checklist and you go check off, print this out, check off, put this here, so on and so forth, there's no checking, saying take out the jump drive and put it in the plastic thing. So as you're going, you're rushing at 8, 9 o'clock at night trying to get everything cleaned up, and you're going through your checklist, check. I didn't see anything that's saying get the jump drive, and when you're rushing, we might forget.
That's a great point. Thank you. We'll take a look at our materials and see if we can update that.
Okay. And I think that was it. As long as the tablet works and we can get our PDF files on there, then hopefully will the judge of elections, will she have all the paper information so we can just actually physically check in, you know, on a piece of paper, yes? Or do we need to print?
Yeah, I don't think that material is being provided for you. What will be provided is the election day guide for poll workers, but not all the checklists. So if you'd like those, I would suggest that you print those off and take those with you.
Okay, because I'm not the judge of elections, but I'm the minority, and I'm very anal, and I'd like to have all that stuff so I can help that out and just check everything off. And it's a lot of pages. There's like 20 or 30 pages that have to be printed off for that information and stuff. So I was just wondering on that. Okay, I think that's it. Thank you very much for your help.
Thank you. Your judge of elections is happy to have you looking out for them.
Thank you.
The next question is from Susan Zamboon. Your line is open.
Yes, actually I had a couple questions, and the most important one was about the mysterious envelope X that we're not getting. Then that's been answered at least 7 times by now. My next question was, will we definitely be getting the labels? Because I just ordered some. I'm going to cancel them. I ordered them on Amazon. So if we're going to definitely get the I voted labels, that's wonderful. That was my only question.
Oops, did we lose you?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yes, you'll get the iVoted stickers. Yeah, sorry about that. And sorry for the background noise. There's a little construction going on upstairs just overhead.
That's okay. That's fine. That's great. Thank you so much.
Sure. We've got about 5 minutes left, so Paul, why don't we take just 2 more questions and then we'll provide some final wrap-up comments.
That's noted. Ma'am, the next question is from Tracy Somani. Your line is open.
Oh, thank you very much. I just wanted to know regarding the mail-in ballot, and there's been a lot of questions about it. I have someone that has, it's a husband and wife. They have mixed envelopes, and so his name's on hers, her name's on his. They whited it out and then fixed it all up. Can they still submit those without it just being disqualified?
I strongly suspect that will be a problem. The better thing to do would be to have them go to a voter service center and get a replacement ballot, envelope, and ballot.
Okay. A voter, go to...
Show up at a polling place and turn them in and spoil them for an election day ballot.
Okay. But if they want to do it now, do they... They need to go to the, if they go up to come up to you guys and get, what do they need to say?
They should explain what has happened and ask for replacement ballots for each of them.
Replacement.
Yeah, and the voter service centers, the three voter service centers, the one at the Government Center in Media, the one in Chester City Hall, and the one in Upper Darby, will continue with their regular hours through 8 p.m. on Election Day. And that's simply for people exactly like in this case, where they want to come in and get a replacement ballot.
Okay, and will they... do they need to bring their the soil or the one that has a whiteout on it? Do they need to bring that one in to receive replacement?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And sure, they have ID because we can't just give people no ballot without knowing who they are.
Okay, and then they will be able to cast it right there. Like if you know if they go over today or tomorrow, they can just cast the vote right there.
Yes, I might suggest that they go tomorrow because today is the deadline for people who are applying for mail-in and absentee ballots, and the lines can be quite long. I'm not sure. Those crowds will be thinned out by tomorrow, and they might save themselves some time if they wait until tomorrow.
Okay. So, and then the other option would be to go to the on Election Day and vote provisional. Is that correct?
Or trade their ballot in and have it spoiled in favor of an Election Day ballot because, you know, if they have
they
a ballot envelope, you know, what if they screwed up and they realize what's going on, they could just sort of explain it to the person at the polling place. If they're both there and together, it sort of will be pretty obvious what has happened. They'll both spoil their ballots in favor of Election Day ballots and then go vote on the machine or vote on the ballot and through the machine.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you so much. That's the only question I had.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'm just being cognizant of time. It's 1:30. So we'll be hosting two more of these calls, one more tomorrow and then one on Thursday. Any of you are welcome to log in to either of those calls as well. But we wanted to just say thank you to each of you. Jim, did you want to say something? We want to say thanks to each of you because we know that you're really the backbone of this general election and making sure that it goes off smoothly and safely. So we want to thank you for your participation and for your leadership on November 3rd. So thanks again for joining. And Jim, I'll turn it over to you.
This is Jim Savage from the Voting Machine Warehouse. I just want to give one last sort of warning. The cages can weigh up to 400 pounds fully loaded. They're on wheels. They can get momentum behind them and be hard to stop. It's easy to hurt yourself if you don't be careful. So please, when you're moving your cages around, use two people, move them slowly. Be especially careful if you're on an incline. And at least one of the wheels on the cage has a brake on it that you operate with your foot like a lever. Once you get your cage to where you want to unload it, engage that brake so it doesn't move around on you and don't get hurt. Thanks, everybody, for all you do.
Yeah, we don't want to hear about any injured poll workers. So you guys are too valuable to us, you ladies and gentlemen. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we're looking forward to a great general election come November 3rd.
Speakers, please stay on the line to all participants. Thank you for joining. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect. Have a great day and stay safe.